studio, Stephen Weasel Hurley. Give it up, Weasel Weasel.
Yeah, boy.
There it is right now. Ready to bring you football talk just the way you like it here on the Student of the Game with the National Gridiron Network. And Weasel, I got to tell you, man, lots of fun stuff this past week. I was hanging out with Melissa Mahler of Pro Player Insiders. Also, you know the editor for the Real Men of Awesome One, Demosthenes Euclid.
Yes,
yeah, yeah. I used to actually live with him. Small world, right? 6 degrees and all that. Well, we were there at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in Orlando, checking out the NFL Players Association meeting, hanging out with various people. And if you go over to ProPlayerInsiders.com or their YouTube channel, Pro Player Insiders YouTube channel there as well, you'll see a number of interviews with Melissa there. She's talking with, I was about to say Dallas Clark, not Dallas Clark, Jeff Saturday, Dominic Foxworth, Brian Waters, a few of the former members of the former executive committee kind of giving their transition speech on their way out to let the people, you know, the players before them know, you know, what it is that they should look forward to, or what it is that they should, basically the advice in their term. And of course, Pro Player Insiders last Wednesday broke the news nationally that Eric Winston, most famously a tackle for the Houston Texans, then the Chiefs, then of course the Cardinals last year, currently a free agent, but he's a member of one team in specific, and that is the executive committee of the NFLPA. He is voted the president, and ProPlayerInsiders.com broke that news first. Check out that article. It is on the site, ProPlayerInsiders.com.
I would think he gets paid for that.
I don't pretend to know that part, but it'd be interesting if it is. I don't know how that works exactly, but considering the fact that, you know, you do have to sacrifice a lot of time doing it, hearing about the way some of it works with the Players Association. Basically, for those who are curious, right, every team has a player rep, you know. So these are some of the guys that Melissa and myself actually interviewed. That's right. I interviewed NFL players on camera. What? No, but
nice.
I'm talking smack. No, I'm still kind of flabbergasted by it. I'm on camera for the first time. Try to make sure you look at the player and not me too much, although I am wearing a nice shirt. But when you have those NFL player reps, the players will go to them with a particular grievance, concern, issue, whatever. Hey, what about this? You know, I don't know. I want rubber ducks in the shower, let's say. I'm not literally that's a problem they'd want, but you see where I'm going. Anyways, so then they would take it to the next level to a player rep meeting. Player reps would talk about it, and then it would go up to the executive committee and things like that, and then the vote would actually happen in one of these players' meetings. They obviously don't have an election every year, but the term for the president is 2 years, and a member of the NFLPA is then ineligible once they've been voted while not a member of the team. So that's the reason why Dominic Foxworth is on his way out. Anyway, so that's enough of the politics and stuff. Fantastic time there. Please check out ProPlayerInsiders.com. Got a lot of quality stuff there. And, you know, don't forget, check out the good old-fashioned NationalGridironNetwork.com right there. You got some excellent content there. Basically, a lot of stuff about the draft and a lot of free agency stuff. Weasel, man, free agency here going a little bit crazy shows what happens. We got a little bit of extra cap room to work with.
That's right. So there's some, you know, overpaying that's going on. But, I mean, it's actually it's really, really active out there. So and it's not even close to being done.
Well, let me ask you this philosophical question real quick, my man. I mean, this isn't necessarily football, but the business of it. You use the word overpaid. If you give a player more money because the cap just increased, is that considered overpayment?
Well, I don't know. Well, it's you just have that extra money available, so you're gonna throw it at somebody. So it all depends on how he would fit with the team. So because I think there's like a team like maybe the Raiders or okay, something like that would they draft guys that are, you know, a little bit over in age and they've actually been a really busy team this offseason.
You don't mean draft, you mean pursue in free agency. They're fond of veterans, and I mean, Lord knows that was true in the Al Davis regime. You know, since he died a couple years back, the Raiders have noticeably gone a little bit different direction. That you don't see the days where they're going to actively over-pursue a Darius Haywood Bay in the draft, necessarily. But I don't know. I'm still kind of in a place. And it's interesting, you say it depends on a lot of things. Well, another point that's worth mentioning here in this concept is if you don't pay the price another team will for a player they want really badly, which could possibly lead to the representation of how exactly and why exactly one Matt Schaub went from being the laughingstock of the NFL, having arguably his worst year as a starter this past season, to now being acquired by the Raiders to be the future, or at least the next season's starting quarterback for the Oakland Raiders. Weasel, let me kind of take you to the obvious fan question here, you know, because football, right?
Football.
Yeah. I can't front on that. What did do the Raiders significantly improve by going to Schaub over Terrell Pryor?
I think so. You got Schaub. It's his, I believe it's his 11th season. And started off with the Falcons, went over to the Texans. And there was only, it was about 2 years ago where his touchdowns were at 22 to 12 interceptions in 2012. And then he had this year 10 to 14 interceptions. But he, I think it's just like a Josh Freeman type of thing, because he has shown promise. I mean, he has some pretty darn good stats, and he's made a couple Pro Bowls. So what he could do for Raiders, I think it's a big upgrade over Pryor, who he's asking for a trade now. And I think it's just he is like more of a running quarterback, I would say. And I don't think the Raiders wanted to go that direction.
Right.
And so they have a little flexibility with if they want to draft a quarterback, but they have someone solid that can, you know, maybe not throw as many pick sixes, but they got a team that, you know, gives them flexibility to have a first-year guy. And a player like, we'd say, like Bortles or something like that, it's saying that he's like the prototypical quarterback, everything you need, but the guy still needs maybe to sit a year. And that going with the Raiders, I don't like it if he went there, but he does. I think it'll be good for a young quarterback, either it's Manziel, Bridgewater, or Bortles, that they get to sit at least a year, and Schaub is that reason.
Well, so let me, not that anything you said is bad. You know, they're looking for that, hey, this is a stand-in, we want this guy. Let's put it this way. When you still have Peyton Manning in the division and the Chiefs, who are still on the rise like they are, and then the Chargers, it sounds to me like they're basically trying to wait for Peyton Manning to retire and Phillip Rivers to get another year older, and then take their chances with the Chiefs offense, which isn't exactly explosive, especially when they're relying on a running back like they are with
Jamal Charles.
Thank you. Oh, my God. I totally... You saw the deer in the headlight.
I gotcha.
That was pretty awful. No, you have my back there for sure. Weasel, Weas!
Yeah, boy!
That's what it is. No, but and so I could see that approach to where they could possibly even maybe... trying to put themselves in a position to angle for, say, I don't know, a Jameis Winston maybe in a future draft, something like that, and maybe they come away with a Jadeveon Clowney, with a Ben Watson, the big receiver out of that's coming up in the draft here, a top five pick himself in some boards, and goodness gracious, probably a better decision than Darius Haywood Bay at this point. Of course, hindsight being 2020, I still don't know. But I'm thankful for the fact they didn't take Michael Crabtree ahead of him those years back. I digress. Anyway, so you mentioned the quarterback draft, and you mentioned Blake Bortles specifically as the prototype. But, I mean, like you said, they got Manziel, they got Bridgewater. If they're not looking for a running quarterback, that beef is going to be something they're looking at, too. They did, of course, sign an O-lineman, a veteran in Penn at the tackle position there. I remember him being a buck at some point throughout his career. So, you know, there was a little talk of him over in the Sarasota area for a while back there, veteran guy. But at the fifth pick, it's not very likely they're going to get a Bortles, a Bridgewater, a Manziel. However, as they say, there's a lot of talk. And granted, it's all talk at this point. This could very well be a head fake, but, you know, it's the off season, so we're going to bring it up anyway. There's talk that they might be pursuing Derek Carr in that number 5 spot in the draft. Now, keep in mind, Derek Carr is a guy that's not even in some people's top fives. I mean, if you look at some of these big talking heads, AJ McCarron's and Mike Garoppolo are both ahead of Derek Carr. But Weasel, I'm going to take it to you. I know we were talking about this before the show. We brought up Derek Carr, and I don't want to call it a stink eye, but you gave me a very particular face when I said Derek Carr, and you're like, wait, at the 5 pick? Rawr?
Yeah, I still feel that way.
I still that way. Well, break it down, man. I mean, tell us what you think the Raiders should do there.
Well, the Raiders are sitting at the number 5 pick.
Right.
And there are teams in front of them, like maybe the Texans.
Texans, Jags, Falcons, to name a few.
Yeah. They're going to be looking for a quarterback.
Right.
So I think it's going to be like the year Alex Smith and Aaron Rodgers were picked.
Okay.
Where Rodgers was viewed as, you know, he's a good quarterback from Cal. You know, nothing really too special about him. But he was picked like number 23 by the Packers. And a guy named Alex Smith was drafted by the 49ers.
Which I hated that pick then. For the record, I'm not just somebody who jumped on the bandwagon. I was always against Alex Smith. That is all.
That's, but when you look at the draft, it's like, I think with the Packers, you know, they got the good end of the deal. But whenever you have these quarterbacks, if you believe in them, if the coaches feel that that guy can possibly be a franchise quarterback, I mean, that's up to them. And if Derek Carr goes number 5, there are plenty of players that jump up in a draft, namely Christian Ponder. he was seen as like a second or third round pick by many teams.
Right.
And Ponder was Florida State quarterback. He was picked 12 overall. And with the Vikings, it's on and off with him, but I don't think he's looking like a solid NFL backup as opposed to, you know, the future for an organization.
Right. And when Ponder came out as a rookie, it looked like there'd be hope. He was just good enough to, you know, not kick to the curb, so to speak. You know, I kind of felt like it was the right thing to do when they ended up getting Ryan Khalil. Okay. I get Ryan Khalil and Matt Khalil confused because they're Khalils and they're O-linemen, but one's a tackle, one's a center, whatever. But Khalil's draft the next year made sense because they're like, look, RG3, Andrew Luck, both gone. We need to protect this guy who we're going to give a shot. He did good enough in some games, and the Donovan McNabb experiment failed mightily. We need to find a way. So I kind of feel like, and I'm going to use the adage that you and many other draft experts use. You get the best player on the board. And, you know, frankly, if the Raiders think that's Derek Carr, again, they'll get hacked to pieces in the media. That's obvious. But if that guy really grades out that high with them, I think they're wrong if they don't make a move on him, right? When's their next opportunity to make that pick, you know?
I think what's going to happen with the Raiders is that there's going to be, I think one of the top three quarterbacks are going to drop. I think, and it'll go to pick number 5, which is not very, very far along.
Right.
And so I think the Raiders would want to go for a guy like Sammy, the wide receiver for
Sammy Watkins.
Sammy Watkins, because it's kind of like AJ Green, where you don't have to throw the ball very well for certain guys. So you can underthrow it, they will get it.
I like the way you put that. You don't necessarily have to have a great quarterback to get this mofo the ball. I like where you're going there.
So what I'm thinking is that if they want Derek Carr, I think that some team, could it be like a team like the Vikings at number 8, would want to jump to that spot and, I mean, getting some picks back early and having more options for the draft. I mean, that could be big for the Raiders. So trade back is my guess. And Derek Carr, I think it'll be seen as not as bad of a move if they do pick him like in the top like 10 or 15 or so.
Right.
But picking at number 5 is just,
I mean, that's
that's risky.
There's a lot of people that say 20 if pick for him, right? So 15 picks up versus 10. Okay, I could see where you're going. It's less of a reach. I understand that. And from my point of view, I'll be honest, I have not seen enough Derek Carr film to really make a call on this cat.
You've seen his brother, though, right?
Oh. I don't think it's fair to knock him for his brother either. For one, he's alone. When you're playing behind that Houston Texans O line, anyone's psyche would be thoroughly crushed. And how on earth can you play in the NFL by getting smashed on a regular basis? No, that's a bad place to be. Mm-hmm. That's a bad place to be. And in that day, he's getting hit twice a game by Dwight, twice a year, I should say, in two games a year from Dwight Freeney. I think he's around there. And, Javon Curse is still a Titan at that point. Those two representing four games alone is just a little bit painful. And I'm sure I can elaborate more and find more examples of why Derek Carr, David Carr, was a quarterback that struggled. I mean, it goes all the way back to Tony Boselli and that unfortunate injury where he was going to be a Texan and be a big deal and then wasn't, and then Derek Carr, and dominoes. But the Cowboys still have found a way to lose to them in their inaugural game when the Texans came to pass. I'm just saying. Anyways, and you mentioned trading up. A lot of times, Weasel, I would say that in this day and age with this NFL, that a lot of the teams aren't wanting to pay that kind of cash for that high a pick. However, whether these three quarterbacks in the draft are worth it or not, there's a certain value. They're coveted quite highly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's enough. I'll put it this way. If there's that trade that you're talking about, it's going to happen on draft day. It's going to happen on Thursday.
Most definitely.
Yeah, it's not going to be one of these things where it's well before, oh, by the way, we did. No. And you seem to agree with me, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'll put the pop quiz, because you floated a very interesting concept, and I know we're going to dance with your fanhood a little bit here, but that is what it is. So the Vikings jump with that fifth pick, trade with the Raiders to get that fifth pick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which quarterback do you hope fall? Which one of the three quarterbacks do you hope falls?
Personally, I think UCF's Blake Bortles.
Okay.
The guy, there's the thing about having, the guy's 6'5", he weighs 230 pounds.
He's a big dude.
He's mobile.
Yes.
And everything like that.
Well, all three of these guys are mobile too, but.
Yeah, they're mobile, but one thing that he showed with UCF is that, I don't know how many fourth quarter comebacks there were for the Knights.
Yeah.
But they came back from, I think, 20 points or something like that against Louisville, one of the top three quarterbacks.
Say, who played at Louisville? Well, that would be Teddy Bridgewater. That's an excellent point, Weasel. Well done.
So, and about the maturity so far about Bortles, he's getting, from what people have been hearing, from coaches and stuff.
Right.
He could be a solid NFL player. And
hell, I'm not going to front. I've seen him talk some in some interviews too. This dude's pretty sharp. I mean, he's not as sharp as Robert Griffin was as a rookie when you were seeing him there. But I like the way this dude talks. I like what he brings to the table.
About Teddy Bridgewater, one thing that I thought was pretty lame was that at his
pro day,
he was throwing and he wasn't very accurate. I think he just.
It's safe to say he struggled.
He struggled, yes. And he even said that, I think I would have done better if I had worn my gloves.
Had worn my gloves, yes. Yeah,
he didn't have gloves for it. And so he said that affected it. And it's like, you don't want to hear excuses. It's like, you got a guy like Bortles who played pretty solid. And if you do bad and you are explaining it on a glove, we'll think about Manziel. He's the wild card here because the guy's amazing at scrambling.
Right.
He's got, I think people say he's got eyes in the back of his head.
Right.
And it's just, it's great and all, but hopefully he's a smart quarterback by sliding and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, he's such a wild card. He has things outside of, people talk about outside the NFL or outside college about him. But overall, I think the safest best would be Bortles.
Well, let me address a couple things there that you said that were definitely interesting. But I'll put it this way. For one, Teddy Bridgewater is the poster boy for why we throw at the combine. Okay? We throw at the combine, so if we throw bad at the combine, we could bail ourselves out at the pro day. this cat put all his eggs in one basket. See, it's funny because Louisville's the Cardinals and they're birds and they lay eggs. Well, unfortunately, one Cardinal in particular laid an egg on that pro day. And of course, as you mentioned, that was Teddy Bridgewater. However, had he thrown at his combine, he could go, oh, I didn't have my gloves at the combine. I guess I did pretty bad. He could come out, throw with his gloves on, up his stance, boom, call it a day. No draft stock loss whatsoever.
I think of one thing about the combine is that you throw to various wide receivers from all around college football.
Sure.
And the thing about that is that you don't know them. So sometimes you, if you're a quarterback, you can like know who you could throw, like, you know, overthrow a little bit, you know, who could run and get it. You know, your players, they slants and everything like that. You don't get that at the combine, but on your pro day, you get your wide receivers to throw to guys that you've, you know, been maybe like in a couple years in the league with. And because he didn't throw at pro day, he had nothing to compare, because a good excuse for a pro day is that, yeah, I wasn't just very comfortable with the wide receivers and I should have, you know, done better. But, yeah, it's just one of those things that, you know, make you think.
Well, I can say this to you already, right? Think about it like you're watching the combine and you hear the guys talking on there, and sometimes it's worth listening to and sometimes it's not. I'll be honest, we all know that that's the case. But what I'll take it is this. It's the fact that if you throw in the combine and you don't make a completion, the coach isn't so worried about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, throw an out. You throw the out where it's supposed to be and the receiver doesn't get there, whose fault is it?
Yeah, they'll know. Moreover,
if you get the if the receiver gets the completion, he looks good for getting the catch, but he knows you didn't throw the right ball if you throw to just make the completion. So what's worse, having that happen, fixing it in pro day, or not having your gloves for pro day? Not to mention, if this is really the equipment you've had since your junior freaking year in freaking college, and you didn't bring it to the most important day of your draft career, of your college career to be drafted in the NFL, I don't want that guy. I don't want that guy. That tells me he's a preparation problem. If there is one thing, one position, where you can't slack on preparation, what would you say that it is, Weasel?
I think all eyes are on the quarterback.
Interesting you think that, because I happen to agree with you. I know that's a stretch. Yeah. I don't know, man. That's where I'm at. Anyway, so at the end of the day, pro day, look, I mean, let's be honest. When it comes to Bridgewater, I really don't think he's going to escape the top five, just the way they work out. At this juncture, I find it more likely, personally, that he will end up a Jacksonville Jaguar, just because I like saying Jaguar.
Close to, like a... He would be in like his home state of Florida, so traveling far.
Bridgewater in his home state of Florida?
I was like, Bortles, my bad.
Oh, okay. In that case, yeah, no. I really think because, and I could be wrong, Bill O'Brien, the coach of the Houston Texans, has already stated, we are going to pick up a quarterback, even though in the aftermath of parting with Matt Schaub, he ended up with Ryan Fitzpatrick later.
They got a quarterback.
It's good to have a good backup, I guess. But or someone a guy can learn from, let's be clear. And let's put it this way. If you're going to have someone be a teacher, might as well be a cat with a Harvard degree.
Mm-hmm.
Throwing that out there. But I feel like Bortles, for what they're going to try to do, is the best fit. That being said, I think the Texans need to go on the hunt real fast for some receivers. Because I know they have DeAndre Hopkins. They have... Andre Johnson, but Andre Johnson ain't a happy character. And I know I like Owen Daniels too, but that's a dude that's taken some beatings. And Ben Tate is now a Cleveland Brown, so they have only the Aryan Nation, Arian Foster.
It was kind of weird because for Ben Tate, he was seen as one of the top running backs in free agency. And I think the Browns signed him, I think it was like 2 years, like $7 million. They got like a pretty good deal on the Brown side. So
yeah, no, you can argue that. So it's for certain that Look, okay, if you're going to get a guy on the open market, it's Ben Tate, okay? He's good. He's good enough to be a starter. He started some games and done well. And what else is important, Weasel? He was in a committee system. Well, why is that important? Less wear and tear. Less wear and tear.
Yep.
That's why Mojo is still playing at the quality he is in Jacksonville, because earlier in his career, he was splitting time with Fred Taylor.
And Arian Foster, he usually leads the NFL in rush attempts, and that's less for a lot less for wear and tear for
that's Ben a good Tate, call. So. I don't know that he leads it in the entire league, but he's certainly in the top five regularly.
I mean, he's usually above 350 carries or something like that.
So that's a lot.
It's up there.
I don't know. So I mean, but that's a legitimate concern. I could see where you're going. Absolutely there. You know, I like that we got a little bit of draft talk in here. I mean, you know, I'm not a draft guy per se. I usually save that to where we'll get either the secret agent of sports, Chris Rizzo, on here, or Andrew Glukov, both former Student of the Game panelists. But hey, don't forget, check out Andrew, 9 o'clock here Eastern Time on Monday nights on the National Gridiron Network here, where he will be hosting the College Cram with one John Doucette. And I'll tell you, Weasel, I wouldn't necessarily talk college baseball, but he can. And so, yeah, there you go. Amongst other things, of course, the draft will be foremost on the minds of those two gentlemen, absolutely. But they are definitely going outside of the realm of football. They're able to bring you all college sports. But don't forget, they'll still take the time to bring you football talk, just the way you like it. You know, Weasel, we've been talking an awful lot of draft stuff here. We got the first half of the show out of the way here. So we are going to go ahead and take a short break. You are listening to the National Gridiron Network. And we are back here on the National Gridiron Network. You are listening to the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game. And, of course, across from me, helping you break down the free agency, the preseason, the off. Which is it? Is it preseason or offseason? What do you prefer?
Oh, it's like what? The NFL has no offseason type of thing?
That's what I'm talking about. It's preseason. Weasel Weez.
Yeah, boy.
There's Stephen Weasel Hurley reminding everyone there is no offseason. The on-air light is always on. For those of us here at the Student of the Game and the National Gridiron Network, let me tell you what, gentlemen, a little note for Tuesday night. The National Gridiron Network weekly show is going to be off for the week. The main man himself, Don Rafael Garcia, the host of the NGN Weekly, is moving into a new house. So, you know, technical difficulties. But I would encourage you, previous at, I believe it is 7:30 Eastern time, you have press coverage with John Presser, Shukri Wright, and Matthew Falkenberry. They will bring you all things involving the AFC East. A lot of movement there. And let's go ahead and start a little wee discussion of our own, Weasel, when it comes to AFC East. And, of course, you knew we had to talk about it sometime. The man himself, Michael Vick, possibly changing shades of green that he's wearing at the quarterback spot. I know I didn't prep you for this. This is all just an opinion piece, so don't freak. I know you're a research man. That's okay. That's why I like you, Weasel. You like being prepared. You're the Peyton Manning of this show. Okay, you're not Peyton Manning, but you're still pretty off. No, you're the Peyton Manning of the show, man. No, I'm playing with you. Hey, if I didn't like you, I would have said you're the current Curtis Painter of the show, right?
Yeah.
And you would have punched me in the face, and it would have made for a funny show.
Right in the face.
Right in the face! You set me up for that. I like that. Anyways, enough of the silly stuff, or maybe it is silly stuff, when you think about Michael Vick with the New York Jets. Weasel, what you got?
Well, Michael Vick, he did... pretty decent for the Eagles. It's just he did have some injury problems, and so that's something to you have to work with. But with Vic going to the Jets, which I think would be a good move for them, that would leave this guy Mark Sanchez into maybe the unemployment line.
Actually, he's already in the unemployment line. You're thinking of Geno Smith.
They did cut.
Oh yeah, they cut him last year, dog.
All right then.
So. But to make for an interesting point, though, when it comes to the Jets, what I would contend is that between Geno Smith and Michael Vick, Do you see much difference between those two right now?
I think that Vic, while he was a, like early on in his career, oh, it's actually more like, you know, 8 years or whatever, how many how many years he's been there, he's been a running quarterback.
Right.
And Geno is fairly mobile. I mean, the guy, you know, can do stuff on his feet.
Let's be careful with that running quarterback thing for Vic, too, by the way, because among quarterbacks who throw on the run, he throws very well on the run. As a Falcon, he did run more predominantly. He had trouble standing in the pocket and all of that. But when he came back with the Eagles in 20, he came back 1 year in 2010 and was like, oh, gosh, football. And it really didn't count too much because he was just getting back. In 2011, he had a pretty good year. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of an understatement, if you ask me. He had a solid year.
And then he got paid. So.
Then he got paid.
Yeah.
Which led, actually, no, 2010, excuse me, 2010 he had the good year. 2011 happened after he got paid. That was the $100 million contract. And just did absolutely horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone's forgetting you got a guy who's running around the backfield, prone for contact, yada, 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 lost two Pro Bowl caliber linemen up front. Michael Vick, you know what? I had it right the first time, too. 2012 is when he struggled. 2011 is when he did good. Because mm-hmm. the Eagles almost came back and had a playoff spot because of how he performed. Now, last year with the Chip Kelly offense, Vick struggled to start with, but then Nick Foles came in and did something. I got it wrong on Nick Foles. I'll admit it. That dude went crazy. I would honestly like to see him do it again before I'm a believer. But Vic understood, you know, I think a lot of people are like, oh, it's not real. He's totally mad that he's not starting. Yeah, and he's handling it like a man, though. Just ask Alex Smith, who's a crybaby and threw a freaking tantrum when the Niners hinted that they might talk to Peyton Manning about, you know, starting in San Fran over him. Because Peyton Manning! You notice how, like, there's kind of a silence after that?
Yeah.
As if I've won the argument with Alex Smith?
Yep.
I'm sorry.
He's gone.
This
so.
Is the thing for me. How do you say no to Peyton Manning starting over you? Anyway,
exactly.
This is what? This is almost 3 years now. I need to get over it. That's fine. But what I'm getting to... Go ahead, we love
it's kind of like for a guy like Sanchez, when you're going after a guy, you know, like Manning, it's like you got to know your place, you know.
Well, yeah, and Sanchez was one of these. Oh well, we need to give Sanchez an extension because we talked to Peyton Manning. Yeah, I forgot about that garbage.
Yeah, and so last year he wasn't, you know, very productive. He got benched.
Well, he was hurt too.
Yeah. Well,
there's that.
There's that too. But just with Vic to the Jets, I think. If he could stay healthy, I think he'll show like Geno that, you know, you can stay in the pocket. That's something that he improved on
right.
From his Falcons years, is that the guy's looking to throw. He's pretty accurate. And Geno, he's still the guy. Well, not, you know, he's seen as the future right now for them.
Mm-hmm.
And Vic would be a good mentor. So
I agree. As a matter of fact, let's pretend for a minute that Vic even attains the starting job. What do you and I both know up front? Despite the fact Nick Mangold, DeBrickashaw Ferguson, and Willie Colon are among his linemen, what's going to happen to Vic? He will miss games.
Mm-hmm.
He's over 30, and he plays in the NFL the way he does. He is going to miss games if he's named the starter. What better time to have a guy like Geno Smith, who has flirted with success and can give his team an opportunity to win some games and raise his own confidence so that he can eventually win the job himself, maybe even during the next season. Now, I'm not going to say anything crazy like they're going to win the division anytime soon. I ain't going that nutty on you. But if you're Geno Smith, this is going to be a frustrating move, but it's going to be a move that makes you look good. Because, Weasel, you've heard me float this concept on this show before. And I'm not saying I think Michael Vick's a bad football player. But this is the opportunity for Geno Smith to have that quote-unquote other dude, his wingman at the club, so he looks prettier than Michael Vick. With the amount of upside he has, right? Mm-hmm. Tell me I'm wrong. You can't.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, he's not going to be a heartthrob like my boy there, G. Steele, our NFC North writer. But, yeah, you know, try not to hold it against him, Weasel. He is a Bears fan. But need to read some of his Vikings articles, though. He still writes very good stuff, despite the fact that he writes about his division rivals, too. Anyways, I don't know.
Right.
It's enough love for my writers right now. Well, no, there's never enough love for my writers. They're all awesome. whether it's G Steel, Teron Davenport, Tuan Staley. I could go on and on. At any rate, so let's switch it over to the West. I mentioned Teron Davenport. Of course, I go out west, right? But not to the San Francisco 49ers, the other side of the Bay. Earlier, we mentioned Schaub becoming a Raider. That by itself, gotta be honest, Weasel, did not really make that big a deal to me. But then I start looking down the list of free agents and free agents acquired in Oakland. And it reads a little some like this. Defensive end, Antonio Smith. Defensive back, Terrell Brown. Defensive end, Justin Tuck. I know you know that name.
Mm-hmm.
James Jones, the wide receiver. Lamar Woodley, the linebacker. You got some very compelling names in this whole scenario. You look at the Raiders. Do you see hope?
Well, I think picking up Schaub and those, I think it was 9 players that got drafted. There's a thing.
Not drafted. Signed.
Yeah, signed.
There you go. Gotcha.
And so 8 of those 9 players are at least entering their 8th season in the NFL. Like James Jones, he was with the Packers for a good while. He was I think he's going to entering his 8th season. And all the other guys, you got Woodley, Smith, Brown, I think, let's see, Donald Penn, Tuck.
That's the tackle, right?
Yeah. So they are, when you pick up like so many veterans like that, it's, and they did get Schaub, it's like kind of you want to win now. And I mean, we'll see how the veterans turn out. Maybe they can help the younger players, but I think when they went this route with the veterans, it's they just want to win. So
here's why I like it. First of all, they had $64 million under the cap. They had a little room to spend with some of what they call the cash. I'm okay with that. Give me the cash. By the way, if you can tweet to me what movie that's from, I'll give you Mondo points. I'm just saying. Not that they will go anything beyond my respect and goodwill, but I. Hey, look, well, it'll be prizes one day soon, I promise. I'm working on the T-shirt. Anyways, what I'm getting to is this. You see a bunch of senior players, veteran players, 8 years and older. I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know, let's get some spots at the local nursing home. No. You see that age. You see that experience entering this roster. I see evidence that they're looking to rebuild this team through the draft. Well, why, Kyle? That doesn't make a damn bit of sense. If they're trying to refill through the draft, how come they got all these old guys? Well, from who do rookies learn?
It's veterans?
Bam. Thank you. Weasel Wheeze.
Yeah, boy.
And so you have these guys in place. Now, granted, I don't know how great an example Justin Tuck is off the field, but you've seen him have some inspirational moments on the field. And I'm making jokes because, honestly, Justin Tuck, I'll put it this way. He's a motivational guy. Too many people know him for
the Subway commercials.
Well, actually, that makes him look in a more positive light. A lot of people know him for the scrape ups he's had on Twitter with other players and being outspoken about his contract and situation in New York and all that. But when you look at film of stuff on the sidelines, he's always motivating dudes. He's always working with dudes. He's always teaching dudes. And I think that's the guy you want. You know, and just looking down this list, I mean, look, when you're Lamar Woodley, when you were a force on one of the meanest defenses in the league, you got some stuff to teach some cats, man. They couldn't get James Harrison because, A, the Bengals already did last year, and B, I think James Harrison has lost the step, as they say. No fault of his own, still a fantastic football player. And basically, you got a lot of guys who came out of environments that were successful. I mean, think about that, okay? Terrell Brown, former 49er. James Jones, former Packer.
2 years ago, he had like 14 touchdown catches.
Thank you, Weasel. Justin Tuck.
Super Bowl guy.
I have 4 Super Bowl appearances among those 3 guys. 3 rings.
Mm-hmm.
I think James Jones was there when the Packers won recently, right? Absolutely. Yeah, you said
he was there. He was there.
And Lamar Woodley.
Yep.
He was at a Super Bowl.
Their names, and it's like, I think the contracts are fairly, they're not too, out in the open. It's just, I think veteran players, these guys, you don't have to pay too much because they're getting on the downside of their careers.
Right.
But, I mean, of course, they can still be, you know, productive.
But let's put it this way. You got older guys. You put all of them on shorter contracts or ones that are, you know, more backloaded so that they can be shipped. You know, you can ship them. Excuse me. After a couple of years. Basically, what you've hired is the Sylvan Learning Center of football.
Hmm.
Okay? You have some of the most badass tutors on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And if they rebuild through the draft, kind of a big deal. Possibility, as they say.
It all starts with that number 5 pick.
Yeah. This is true in any draft, frankly. But in this draft, more than others, where there's 4 guys already who are pretty damn public about being the top players in this draft, one of them falling to the 5th is not outside of reason.
Yeah.
You know. Anyways, we'll leave that at that. A little something I also want to touch on, Weasel, is going back to the AFC East real quick. A particular player who is near and dear to my heart. No, not just because he's big or in the trenches, but that certainly doesn't hurt his case. It's a man who I've come up with what I think is one of my funnier nicknames when I write. And of course, you know, I write weekly for ProPlayerInsiders.com during the season, the Matchup Mania. Where I came to know one defensive tackle, Vince Wilfork, as the fastest immovable object known to man. Yeah, you like that. But not far from the truth. Unfortunately, injured himself last year and was a big reason why the Patriots' defense spiraled out of control and into mediocrity. Why they, you know, were able to give up running yards entirely too much. And when Vince Wilfork was cut, the laments in Foxborough were, well, a lot of people weren't happy. We'll put it this way. We'll skip the poetry. A lot of people weren't happy about Vince Wilfork. Not, granted, not as much as Wes Welker leaving, but wasn't happy. Fill in now where they have Darrell Revis, Brandon Browner, and all of a sudden you got that defensive upgrade, and Robert Kraft is saying, you know, guys, by the way, I haven't given up on the concept of getting rid of this guy. Even if it's just noise. Even if it's just posturing. Even though I'm not a Patriots fan. Brandon Browner, Darrell Revis, and to anchor the pressure up front, you have Woodley.
Mm-hmm.
Or not Woodley, I'm sorry. Wilfork, wrong W. That has potential. I don't know. But in your mind, Weasel, who would be the biggest competitor for Wilfork services? Who would need him the most?
Let's see. Got to be like a 3-4 team usually because they just plug him in the middle at defensive tackle.
Mm-hmm. Nose tackle. Most
nose tackle. Nose tackle. Yeah, excuse me. Who would be a good team for him to go to? I'm drawing a blank here, but...
There's a lot of different possibilities. I could see why you don't have an instant answer. You know, one that comes to mind is your Pittsburgh Steelers.
Actually, yeah. I was just going to think that,
Ziggy Hood, no longer playing there anymore. Be very interesting to see him up there. But if they could pull it off, and I don't think they will because it's an interdivisional rival, if I'm a Dolphins fan, that's a man I want to see in uniform on my side.
Because you get to see him 2 times a year. Dolphins have seen a lot of him, so.
Well, moreover, I don't know that the Dolphins have had a defensive tackle that good ever? Question mark? I don't know. That gets my blood boiling a little bit, seeing what difference he can make there. Of course, obviously, you know, let's put it this way. If we want to, you know, play Madden Pro Bowl and all this other stuff, seeing him plugged into either the Seattle Seahawks defense or the 49ers defense, nightmares! I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I had to give him a little tribute because, you know what? The trenches deserve tribute and they don't get enough of it. Boom. And I don't just mean a song by Tenacious D. I mean actual respect. And he said... No. Yeah, so you like I stuck that in there. Speaking of things getting stuck into places they shouldn't be, Mark Cuban decided to make a comment regarding the NFL and its popularity, Weasel. Weasel, you saw this, right?
Yes, I did.
You got the quotes. Throw it down.
All right. Well, it's just you got Cuban. He's warning the NFL about being too greedy. And this is a quote from Mark Cuban. The NFL is 10 years away from an implosion.
Implosion!
And just to talk a little about, this is kind of funny. So you get pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered, and they're getting hoggy. So now you got, he was saying too, like, you got to warn Goodell of this. When you got a good thing, and you get ready, because it's going to turn on you. So about 10 years, because I think of like the major sports and all, NFL, they've been going up and up with their revenue each year.
Yes.
So, and I don't think NBA have, and baseball have as a successful, like, you know,
no.
Thing there, but he just sees that, I think, for, you can tell it with the lawsuit and stuff. It's just the NFL, they, I mean, they're really money rich, so.
Money rich. Straight cash, homie.
So it's just one of those things where, and I'm sure, like, no one in the NFL are going to think of it, because Mark Cuban is a very outspoken owner of the Dallas Mavericks in basketball.
Correct.
But it's interesting you said that, because nobody really, you don't have people that, you know, call out the NFL like that. So,
first of all, let's get something abundantly clear. Mark Cuban calling somebody greedy is like saying, it's like a shark or a dolphin giving someone a hard time for being wet. And you live under the ocean. Okay, look, this cat owns the Mavericks. I got no problem with that. He's got an NBA championship. He got Dirk a ring, which noble endeavor. I can't front on that. Then he's got the Shark Tank show.
Yeah.
Okay. He's had another show where it was some apprentice wannabe thing that failed. It was a garbage show. Seriously, one of the contests was a game of frickin' Jenga. Jenga. That was just fun. Anyways. And this is a guy who's repeatedly tried to buy other sports teams. His brand is pretty damn tired, but he's going to tell the NFL rather how to do it, how to be more subtle with your approach. A guy who owns a team in a sport where they play 82 games in the regular season. A guy who aspired to be an owner in a sport where they play 162 games in the regular season. And just crammed in an extra play-in playoff game for the expletive deleted of it. Like how I controlled myself there.
Yeah.
But he's going to tell me I'm greedy. But that aside, he's on to something, kind of. And I could see it's kind of stopping the slippery slope. Meaning, what is it? You got Sunday night games. Sunday games general for football. Okay. Then you got Monday night. Now they're starting to add Thursday night in. Thursday night, previously primarily on the NFL Network. Now there's a lot of talk that other networks may get involved, CBS, whatever, may actually start picking up Thursday night games. Okay. Then, of course, college is on Saturday and Wednesday nights and some Thursday night games. And what Mark Cuban is saying is the thing that makes football so damn awesome, psychologically, is the small doses concept. From September to February is the only time you're going to catch it. No, I'm not counting preseason. And that's why everyone's so like, oh my God, the draft. Oh my God, OTAs. Just anything to have their need fluffed just a bit so they can get their fix and move on, you know, with their football craving temporarily satisfied. I know, I live it. Pass me the needle with the football in it. I'm an addict. That being said, in 10 years, I don't know if he's commenting specifically about the NFL trying to get to London. Maybe it's that. I don't know. I don't know if he's commenting specifically on, excuse me, the NFL trying to get cities into LA. But if there's going to be anything, Weasel, that harms the NFL, it's not going to be saturation. More immediately, and you know this as well as I, the problem that the NFL really needs to worry about is the concussion stuff. Okay? I mean, the NFL owners, the NFL, the league, has done more to combat that lately than anything else. As they should, in my opinion. And My response, if I'm an NFL owner, I'm not, but if I were, is I hope we're that dominant for another 10 years without this concussion stuff bringing it down. Because at this point, the NFL is at least, whether they're doing it out of the goodness of their hearts or to protect their investment is irrelevant. They're starting to pay more attention to the safety of the players.
They have to. I mean,
you got it.
It's all about the media right there. Cause
it's all about the media, not to mention the Players Association. Huge thing. When we were there at the Waldorf Astoria here in Orlando, all the guys at least spent a little time talking about the player safety concept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the goals that they aspired to in negotiating out of the lockout in 2011, when they were talking to the owners, was that they wanted to see rookies come into the league that would never practice a two-a-day ever again in their careers. Because once you get to the NFL, no more.
Yeah, that's messed up. But
what's messed up about it? I'm not following.
Well, it's like, pretty much they're limiting the time they practice during the week. And
well, they want to eliminate two-a-days so that your body has time to reset to have a good practice.
Well, it's kind of weird because, you know, if someone wants to work more and they're saying you can only do this, it's like, I don't know, that's the kind of thing. It's good to set some limits, but like with that, I don't see it as too big with me, so.
I don't know. The thing I would say is if you're in full pads, hitting the whole time, both practices, at some point you get that diminishing return. I can't front on that part.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is a good topic. We'll talk more on it later. What I want to get to is this. Mark Cuban, I'm not saying he's wrong. Maybe in 2024, the NFL will be a meager shadow of itself. I hope it's not true. But today, other than business theology, I don't see evidence of it. Do you?
I always do think back to like how they're, you know, for the lawsuit against the concussions and all.
Right.
There's some things I think certain players can get it. Others can't. You have to be at a certain like a year away from football.
Oh, there's certain terms, yeah.
And the amount, the money I think that it ended up being was about, I think, $800 million or so.
Closer to seven, but at this point, actually, the jury's still out on that. In appeal, that offer's been rejected and is being urged to be increased.
Yeah.
So
I think they were talking about numbers there where it's going to be a lot more than $800 million, but
there's a lot of experts out there that have done the math and say that not only is the $700 million-ish figure not enough, perhaps they should be talking with a B in their language,
mm-hmm.
as in a billion. You know, I mean, depending on how many guys they have in the lawsuit, I'm not fronting on that.
Yeah.
But by the same token, and you've heard me say it before on this show, the current players are what's governed by the NFLPA, not the former players.
Mm-hmm.
But the current players won't even give 1% of their stuff to the retired players.
The current players?
The current players will not give 1% to the retired players.
Yeah, just saying.
But the NFL is the villain. I'm saying some controversial stuff, but at the end of the day, 1%, you get that taken care of, then you look like a hero, then you go after the NFL, then you get everything straight. Hey, that's a better strategy all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going after you. I'm not hating on you, current players. I'm just telling you a better way to do it. You heard it here first on The Student of the Game. That's all I'm trying to tell you.
Woot.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, boy.
Oh, man. And for those current players that are still angry, please don't hurt me. No, but in all seriousness, it's just a matter of getting a little bit of goodwill, and then you'll look better challenging the game that everybody loves so much right now. Got about 5 minutes left here in the show, Weasel. And something else I wanted to tackle here real quick is, first of all, we mentioned the Saints fire sale 2 or 3 weeks back. A lot of guys were cut and or floated for trade. Lance Moore being one, Pierre Thomas on the list as well, and Darren Sproles another. Darren Sproles, matter of fact, ended up becoming a Philadelphia Eagle, which, by the way, I'm sure you could think of one, but there aren't many backs better designed for that Chip Kelly offense than one Darren Sproles. Sure, you might have to go Jamal Charles. Oh, damn, you had to raid the damn Pro Bowl to find a guy to immediately that might be a more awesome concept. But for my money, Darren Sproles, that's a good fit in there.
Yeah.
Good fit in there. But once again, DeSean Jackson in the news with the Eagles trying to scope out a better deal. Now, I'm not trying to tell you I find DeSean Jackson to be a bad player, nor should he try to get a little bit more scratch, a little bit more corn, as they say. But I think you're looking in a bad time to risk leaving this team. Because I think the Eagles, with the way the rest of that NFC East is right now, are poised to dominate over a weaker division. Mm-hmm. And D-Jack, look, can I talk to you just between you and me? No one else is listening right now. It's me and you, DeSean Jackson. I'm not an Eagles fan, so I'm not speaking from passion here. I'm trying to advise you. Sign a short contract, maybe a year or two. Get some playoff appearances, maybe some hardware on your belt. Then go get the cash. Yes. It's a risk. But your fans will be happier. In the long run, you'll be happier. I don't know. What says you, Weasel?
I think that with the whole thing getting paid, it's like, I think the Eagles are more, they're on the upside right now. It's Chip Kelly is a, it was doubtful. Like, what would happen with that quick offense?
I was skeptical.
In the beginning, it was like, but later on, they got some production. Like, LeSean McCoy, previous years back, he was, he was kind of up there with his numbers, but the thing was that he wasn't, like, near elite. And this year, with Chip Kelly, I think the guy up there in the top five.
Shady McCoy is limited with injuries, too, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And DeSean Jackson showed successful moments when he could balance out that offense. Now, all of a sudden, he's got an offense that truly is balanced. And, you know, it's appropriate that he wears green because the Christmas tree is how he lights up the scoreboard.
So it would be good if he... I think he should stay because I think at least he has some, like, it's something to look forward to with Nick Foles right now. Mm-hmm. So
I didn't even think of that.
You got a returner in him. You got wide receiver. You got the quarterback position. I mean, it's all coming together for them. So a 1 year, 2 year deal kind of thing would be like a lot of players do that where they only get paid like, you know, $6 million for 1 year. But if he did something like that, he can definitely, you know, cash in a couple years, as you were saying.
Well, a lot of those deals where you get $6 million for a year is something that's backloaded and the players can't or the team can't afford to get rid of you. Playing wise, they can't afford to get rid of you. Fan wise, they can't afford to get rid of you. But I don't know. I can see why there's talk that he wants, you know, a better deal and all this other such with those bigger numbers. You have to at least press the button. But be careful in all that posturing because if you hold out, we've seen that go very badly for players.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Anyways, that'll do it for this week's edition of the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, of course, across from me here, helping me throw it down, Stephen Weasel Hurley. Giving you fantastic action here, good research, all that stuff that he does. Once again, we do miss Chris, but he is making the world safer for democracy. If you want to check out one of our previous shows, go ahead and go on iHeartRadio. That's right. Look for the National Gridiron Network. Of course, we're also on Spreaker and Blog Talk Radio, and coming soon, the NGN transferring over to Google Hangouts. So you might get a chance to see what some of us look like. I apologize in advance. At any rate, you can also check us out on Twitter at the SOTG and let us know some of the stuff you like, some of the stuff you didn't like, or maybe something we should check out. But until next time, for Stephen Weasel Hurley, I'm Kyle Nash, the student of the game. Class dismissed.